You are listening to Pump News Podcast number 442, the episode where we talk about Stomp 442 and nothing but Stomp. No, Front 442. Front 442. That's what we're talking about this episode.
What?
We're talking about Front 442, Adam. The industrial band from Belgium, I believe.
I didn't get when you fucked up the reference, and I didn't get the reference.
Tom, do you remember Front 442, or is it Stomp 442? There's an Anthrax song and an industrial Belgian band. I believe it's Front 442.
It is Front 442.
Are you a fan? No, it's Front 242.
Oh, you're right, dude. It's Front 242. No, they're like KMFDM. They're like a, you know, industrial, no guitar really or anything, but pretty cool. Kind of had a heavy vibe. I mean, they're okay.
This whole thing is the intro, by the way.
Front 242, and we are here with a guy complaining about industrial, a guy that has long hated industrial and said he always hated industrial and never liked any of it, and all he wants is acoustic, calm, sweet, introspective vibes. Managing editor, no, I'm sorry, contributing editor, Adam White. Adam White, why have you always hated Front 242?
I haven't. I just didn't know who they are. I like some industrial music. One of my big bands right now is pretty. Pretty industrial. There's a band called Adonis.
It's Rammstein, isn't it, Adam? No. Pumping your fist in the air. Du hast.
There was this fucking punk band out of Toronto that, like, with each record has just, like, become more and more of an angry robot synth band, and they're just pretty much like a dark industrial act now. They're called Adonis. They're great. But anyways, no, I don't get all your references, but you fucked up your reference. So I think I get a pass on that.
Well, fair enough. Adam White is on the record. He doesn't hate industrial. He just hates all industrial that isn't Canadian industrial. And we were also here with a guy that loves everybody. No, a guy that hates everybody. Tom Trauma, your hatred meter. What's that at today?
My hate, it's pretty low. It was a nice day today. The sun was shining. I had a pretty nice dinner, and I'm sipping on some really good high-end tequila that was gifted to me. So, life is good. Tom, much more expensive than I would buy for myself.
If the listeners want to check out one industrial record, what record should they check out?
Oh, that's an easy one for me. Ministry of the Mind is a Terrible Thing to Taste.
Classic. High 80, sound record.
88 or 80, 88 or 89.
Tom, what's your opinion on the divisive first Ministry album with Sympathy?
I'm not such a big fan. And it's not because I hate all that kind of music, because you might be shocked to know that I have a soft spot for a few of the Depeche Mode albums, but that album just didn't do much for me. I don't really think Twitch is that great either, the second one, honestly. It wasn't until The Land of Rape and Honey, the third full length, that I feel like they were starting to find the voice that would become Ministry.
I would say that Twitch is kind of an aimless record, or doesn't really have a direction, although I do love With Sympathy because I like synth pop to a degree, and I especially like dark synth pop, like Ministry. Anyway, this is features editor John Gentile. Welcome to the Pump News Podcast.
Welcome to the Synth News Podcast.
Synth News Podcast. You can always reach that podcast at punknews.org, and I'm going to read some mail right here, and Tom and Adam are going to react. This is from Guy Deadtooth. And it's quite fitting for today's topics, which we'll get into in just a minute.
Here's what Guy Deadtooth.
Guy Deadtooth.
Proper Christian name, no doubt.
What's an ornithologist's favorite hardcore band?
Oh, what? No.
An ornithologist.
I don't know what that means.
One who studies birds.
I'm going to say Nightbirds.
Adam, you have a guess?
I don't. I wouldn't call Nightbirds a hardcore band.
October Bird of Death or a sweet hardcore band from Chicago?
Hey, finish the joke, John.
Cro-Mags. And that's from Guy Danzig.
That was the letter?
That stands for Cro-Mags Tom Trauma. That's my touring version of the Cro-Mags.
This is from Timothy. Hello. Hey, all. Thanks for keeping this thing going. I've discovered a lot of new music, and not just through the site, but through the podcast as well. I was listening to the podcast segment regarding the Avail ticket situation. A new venue opened up in Denver called Mission Ballroom, and like Avail, they are also trying something new with ticket sales. They work through AXS, which is basically Ticketmaster, right? Or is Live Nation or whatever. They work through AXS for tickets, and they are run by AEG. So they're still a part of the big ticketing system. That being said, they use a unique process for selling tickets. The way it works is you pay a dollar deposit. Customers are put in a bucket, and at some point they randomly select who will receive tickets. If you're not one of the patrons selected, you get your $1 back. I think it's an interesting model, but I know I'd be disappointed if I put down a deposit.
Like a lottery. So it's like a lottery system.
Is this a foolproof way to deter scalpers? I've also been to shows that don't give any tickets out, and you have to show your ID at the door instead. Perhaps that's the only foolproof method. Wondering what you all think. Also, Adam, thanks for answering my stupid new dad question on Twitter with something meaningful and thoughtful and helpful. Cheers from Tim.
Yeah, I remember that. I am helpful. I'm not against the idea of some sort of lottery system for a really high ticket show, because otherwise there's way too much circumstance that determines where you get in line, right? I mean, like virtually. So like let's say there's tickets that go on sale at like 10 o'clock on Friday, and everyone rushes to their computers, and 5,000 people try to get on there, and there's only 1,000 tickets available. Is the fact that like one of the guys that's trying at that given time has a slightly more opportune internet connection than the other guy, is that really reason for him to be ahead of them in the line? Like, they all showed up, they're all worthy of tickets. So I think at that point, throwing them all into a hat and then picking names out is not a bad idea. I mean,
Adam, is that accurate? If you have a super quick internet connection, you're more likely to get better tickets.
No, I mean, like that was a dumb example, but like there's 100 different reasons why two people trying to access something on the internet at the same time are going to get in whatever order that they get into. And when you really get down to the wire, and there's two people that are trying to get in there at virtually an identical time, there's all sorts of like really dumb tech reasons why one is going to show up in front of the other that have nothing to do with like the worthiness of the people or how hard they tried. Like, the meritocracy aspect of it is dead at that point. You're just going like, oh, this, the Heisenberg principle happened to make this guy show up first as opposed to the other. So I don't know if that, that means that one guy deserves it more.
There are programs and software and things that just are really fast and just go boom, 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 and we'll get you through, I believe. Now, I don't know how to use that kind of stuff, but the scalpers use that to clear out tickets.
Well,
it keeps dialing. Like, there's the same thing with the program for phone. Like, if you're trying to win something off the radio, there's certain phone programs that, well, not a guarantee certainly, but it'll call, just keep calling relentlessly.
Like, as with all slow tech things, it depends where the bottleneck is, right? And when you're talking about like,
really, I don't know about.
Well, like the bottleneck is like what's actually restricting people from getting in. So is it the fact that, my connection's faster than you means that I get there first? Well, okay, so let's say we had the same speed connection. Well, then if we both try to get to the site at the same exact moment, is it that at that point you're leaving a lot of stuff up to chance? Is it that when, from a split second standpoint, when I hit the page, it made a database query before yours did, And maybe it's because my browser loaded the images in this way and yours loaded them in that way. And that meant that I loaded the next part of the page faster than you. Like there's all kinds of dumb little tech things that are really going to determine that. So yeah, like at that point, that's why something like a lottery seems to make a lot of sense to me. I mean, you're bound to disappoint people one way or the other. So I feel like being disappointed because, you know, the lottery didn't flip the coin in your favor is a better disappointment than, oh, I just didn't get it because the whole thing is fucking rigged.
There used to be Ticketmaster actually had physical locations. So there are
still technically do, Tom. I mean,
are there hubs where you can, are there Ticketmaster locations? Because I can go to the Ticketmaster location at my venue to buy tickets for that, but I can't get tickets for something else. Used to be there was three or four of them in Grand Rapids that had Ticketmaster outlets where I could go buy tickets for Chicago, tickets for Detroit, tickets for anywhere. If there was a big show in Detroit, this tickets will go on sale at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning. That was the time when tickets went on sale.
Yeah,
at Walmart, apparently.
People would physically show up. There's not one here, though. There's not. I tried to find a physical Ticketmaster. There is not one in my area. Maybe there are some areas.
When I was a kid, they were in the mall record stores. I don't know if that's the way it worked in the States.
There was some of those. There was a big record store here that had one, and there was a chain where a couple of them had one, and there was a few around. And so Saturday morning at 10 o'clock is when all the big shows are going on sale. So for example, if this is a real example, if we wanted to go see Pink Floyd in Detroit, we didn't have to go online. We didn't have to go on the phone. We went to the Ticketmaster in Grand Rapids, 3 hours away, and you'd get in line. And to keep people from getting in line at 5 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, or midnight the day before, they would say 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock tickets go on sale. 9 o'clock, we're handing out wristbands. So they hand out wristbands based on the order you come in, right? 1 through 500 or whatever. And then they would randomly draw a number out of a hat and say it was 243. That means the line starts at 243. 244 is next, and it goes backwards like that. And that worked pretty well. But the computer obviously throws it into a – if we could do the digital equivalent of that, that would be pretty cool.
I'll tell you how to solve all of this. Is cut Ticketmaster's bullshit. Did you know when you buy a ticket now, I bought a ticket at Ticketmaster because I'm an idiot. Did you know when you buy a ticket now, you can buy a regular ticket or a resale ticket, which is $5 more, right? And so Ticketmaster gets that extra $5, and then they get a percentage of the resale as well. Here's how you make that illegal. Here's how you stop that. You make ticket scalping illegal like it was 5 years ago. You know what I mean? The whole reason.
But why they're scalping their own tickets. What's their motivation?
But you make that illegal. That's what I'm saying. Is the whole let's be real. Ticket prices are obscene, right? For non-punk shows, ticket prices are obscene right now. That being said, is that really the most important thing in the United States right now or in Canada? It's not really on scale of important things. It's not that important, but it still is a bummer, and it still is annoying, and it still does kind of underscore the underlying dread that giant corporations are controlling the government, and there's nothing you can do about it, which is the real.
John, do you feel like our Congress is hard at work trying to solve our biggest problems?
No, they're not. Well, they're not trying to solve Ticketmaster either. The whole reason we have this problem is because Ticketmaster made it legal to scalp their own tickets. If you make that illegal, like it was 5 years ago, this whole problem goes away. Ticket bots go away. Whacked out scalpers go away because you make it illegal for Ticketmaster to scalp their own tickets. And you go back to the guy selling them on the street, slightly illegal. Maybe you pay a little bit extra, but you don't pay five to begin with. I mean, how crazy is it that the illegal guy on the street is a better service than the registered corporation doing legally ticket resale? You know, you see what I'm saying? The illegal guy on the street is better for the consumer than the corporation. What does that say? You know what I'm saying? That's how you solve this problem. And until that happens, you're not going to solve this problem. And the fact is, non-punks don't give a shit about this. Like at my work, no one really goes to concerts. They'll go to a concert a year or every other year. They don't give a shit. You know what I mean? They'll buy their ticket at a secondary website.
We're staying at a hotel.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
It's funny you were talking about that because I told my story a while back about having bought some Slayer tickets and how pissed off I was about how much fees were on it, but then how I ended up getting tickets to a different Slayer show and resold my Slayer tickets through Ticketmaster, making a huge profit, which Ticketmaster took another huge share off of, as well as taking another huge share off from the bastard who bought them from me. My God. I'm looking at my local arena, my local hockey rink. My daughter has a pair of tickets to see 21 Pilots, who I guess are very popular. And they sold out the arena.
Oh, Tom, don't act like you don't know 21 Pilots.
I know who they are. I've heard of them.
That they're very popular. 21 Pilots is an extremely popular group.
But, I mean, I've heard like two of their songs, John. You're right. You got me. No, but anyway. Anyway, my point.
I've never heard a Backstreet Boys song all the way through. I probably have, but I know that they're famous or were famous, Tom. I've never heard a One Direction song all the way through, but I know that they're famous.
Well, okay. Point being, the cheapest seats for sale right now for 21 Pilots, it's on a Friday, May 31st, are going for $195. Her tickets were $70 a piece. She could turn them over right now and make a pretty penny.
Well, and that's all because Ticketmaster has decided that was illegal. That was legal.
Well, she through Ticketmaster, she has the Ticketmaster app on her phone. She has no physical tickets. They're in the cloud. They're on her phone. She could, man, maybe she should do that, honestly, because she wanted me to go with her, but I just don't know if I could do it, dudes.
You should sell them and then wait till just before the show and get cheaper tickets. That always, actually, we do have a new effect now. Is ticket, and we saw this with the Misfits and Bikini Kill happen, and also Jawbreaker. Three times in a row, tickets price shot way up and just before the concert. See, what happens is scalpers will buy all the tickets and they'll charge 3, 4, 10 times as much for the tickets. And they get stuck with a lot, but they don't give a shit because they made so much money on the other tickets. They buy plenty of extra and they make so much money that the ones left over, it's all bonus cash. So they don't care what they sell them for. So now ticket prices kind of shoot up and then crash down. Oh, meanwhile, another thing, not to go on and on because we talked about this before. Did you know that if Ticketmaster now has what they call flex pricing or something, and that if tickets are hot, the original price goes up? Like
it changes on based on demand. I'll read you the thing. It popped up on my – oh, I went away. But, yeah, ticket prices fluctuate based on demand. They will change the price based on demand.
When I was in Egypt, except for in like big shops, everything's a negotiation. You get in a taxi, it's a negotiation. You buy some food off a street vendor, it's a negotiation. You go into like a smaller shop, it's a negotiation. It's fun for exactly the first day, and then after that it's not fun at all. Like the taxi guy's like, 30 pounds. You're like, I know it's 8 pounds. The price is 8 pounds. I know it's 8 pounds. No, my friend, it's 30 pounds. No, it's 8 pounds, right? The point being is you get back to the stage, you're like, thank God. It's like the price of this is this. The price of that is that. But we're becoming a country where everything's like with with cable, with telephones. Everything's a negotiation. Everything's – and it's not for the benefit of the consumer. You know, and the point being is it really kind of is a symbol of how corporations have undue influence over almost every element of our life. The point being is the idea of rules and regulations is to protect the consumer. The consumer was better protected by the legal guy selling tickets on the street than they are by the legal company selling tickets through their secondary website. So what does that say? You know, I feel like Michael Parenti when he's like, there are some people that think that the purpose of the police is to the prevention of crime, but that's not true. The purpose of the police is protection of property and social control. And I don't necessarily believe all that, but I'm just saying it does feel like that sometimes.
Yeah, not our property. A certain elite level of society's property, but not our property.
The only reason I know that is because I listen to Choking Victims album. You can reach that podcast at punknews.org. We love getting your mail. Let's play a song because this has been a real boo-hoo-hoo podcast so far. So let's bring in some happiness. I'll play a song. Oh, no. Actually, no, never mind. Adam White, I think he wants to go off into the woods or something. Adam, are you going off into the woods?
Yeah. This was – I want advice on this, I guess, either from you or from, like, the from the listeners here. So I – through my newsletter thing, I've been trying to be a little bit more genre inclusive than I would be if I was typically just doing, you know, like punk stuff for punk news. So one of the things that I find on some party is that I'm writing about a lot of garage rock, of course, but and a lot of punk, but I'm writing about a lot of psych rock these days. And I keep intersecting with more bands that like play on this like periphery of the garage punk scene and this like totally whacked out psych world. So, and there's a handful of them that will come across my plate that, you know what, I'll enjoy quite a bit when they're, when I'm listening to them. And, you know, I can't for the life of me remember what half that shit sounds like after I, you know, hit pause or stop. But you know, it's cool. It's cool while it's going. So there is this music festival that I just saw the announcement for. It's going on in northern, not super north Ontario, but like pretty northern Ontario. Let's say like three hour drive north of me. So still north of Toronto from where I am. And it's happening at this place, which is called the, and this is part of the appeal for me. It's happening at somewhere called the Frontier Ghost Town Campground, which best I can understand. Sounds
like you need to take the mystery machine and solve yes, some kind of it identity looks, mystery.
From the internet, it totally looks like a Hollywood version of like an Old West village that was built for some reason or another and then abandoned, right? And it's just a like it's a bunch of like shitty old Western saloon style buildings in a row in like a dirty field. Now it might be nicer than that in real life, because I'm sure this is an actual business, but that is my impression just by like Google image searching this. So there is a music festival that's happening up there in July called Crystal Lake, as in the Friday the 13th.
Crystal Lake. 13th, yeah. Yes.
So Crystal Lake is going down at Frontier Ghost Town. It is a like 2-day like psych rock thing. Who is Dead Meadow, A Place to Bury Strangers, Lumerians, right? Like stuff that you probably want drugs to really appreciate what's going on. But there's a bunch
I've heard of A Place to Bury Strangers.
Yeah, I mean they don't quite fit. Like they're not super hippy dippy. I've actually interviewed them before, but again, like bands that are just going to make a loud amount of wanky noise in what they're doing, right? Which I can get down with. I'm not expecting this to be a punk show or anything like that. But there are bands that are playing this that I've like talked about on my newsletter and things like that. That I do quite like. Paul Jacobs out of Montreal, I really like, is playing it. There's this crazy country guy from Toronto right now that's sort of blowing up named Orville Peck, and he's playing it. Absolutely Free Zones. These are bands where I've talked about before. And there's stuff as you get kind of further down the list that are, you know, you could roughly say they're punk bands, but whatever. Let's say it's not. Let's say it's all just like a bunch of fucking psych rock, right? So it's in this
Corrosion of Conformity, Thomas, and The Obsessed featuring Rhino of St. Vitus.
So
are playing this festival?
Oh no, I'm wrong. That's in Germany.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
Come back.
I mean, so, this sounds to me like, Adam, like it could draw tens of people.
Yeah. So rein this back in, right? So there is a weird 2-day psych rock thing happening in this old kind of frontier ghost town place, right? It is like a camping festival. So like, you know, when you go there, you know, they're saying, you know, bring a tent, bring water, bring canned beverages, bring your own booze, right?
That's nice. That's maybe a
well, right. So that's kind of interesting. Now there's no ATM on site or anything like that. Like they're like, bring a tent to sleep in the tent. But like if you don't want to sleep in the tent, you can totally fucking sleep in your car. It doesn't matter, right? But there's no electricity. There's no there's probably water provided on site, but there's no like, you know, this is not like a festival in the sense that, you know, oh, we've fully prepared, you know, this place for you to come, you know, to come like glamp in luxury.
You will go home covered in grime.
Yeah. And like one of the things in the FAQ is like, are there showers anywhere? And there's like, well, there's a conservation area 10 minutes down the road and you can pay $3 to use their shower if you so wish, right? So super, super low, low prep, right?
But dude, you're gonna be shitting in porta potties for 2 days,
right? That's the worst. there's a part of this that appeals to me.
Not washing your hands.
Well, I think what appeals to me about this is that this sounds like something that like my wife would totally not want to do because it sounds horrible for her, right? So, and like she wouldn't know the bands. She doesn't want to live in like a dirty tent. Or like sleep in the car or anything.
Use your sleeve to wipe for a month or 2 days. You know,
just like bring all your own food in a cooler, right? Like this is not her idea of vacation, but it's close enough that I could totally just like get in my car, drive a few hours, go to this like whacked out strange ass music festival, you know, sleep in my fucking car, come home after 2 days and just like show back up at work on Monday and be like, I had a weird adventure. And there's a
LSD.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like, I want to do drugs in this like weird field. Right. And so this seems like a thing that, you know, I picture myself wandering around at 3 a.m. under the artificial lighting that they put up there amongst all these like fake Western buildings, high as a kite. And it appeals to me. But the question is like, is this just going to be a horrible time? Because I would not be going with anyone that I know. So like I would go there and basically be like a weird hermit. Like I'm going to live in my car and eat my weird cooler food and you know,
warm your beans over the fire and then eat them straight from the can. Over the
fire, right? Like
don't even bring a suitcase, just like have a bindle on a stick.
Well, even like that sort of appeals to me because I'm thinking about it and I'm like, I'm like, if I was to try to bring,
you're romanticizing, dude. It's going to be filthy and disgusting.
Oh, but I think
Adam, I think you should go, Adam. I mean, listen, you have a bad time. So what, you had a bad time for 2 days. You
eat it with the hand. You just wipe your ass with.
Why can't I clean myself, Tom?
There's no cleaning yourself.
You have a great time. You have memories for a lifetime. I think you should go, Adam. What I'm concerned about, Tom, I fear that our boy Adam might be getting into heavier drugs than the sweet, sweet gauze.
Not only that, Adam, but if there's anything I've learned from watching movies that feature places like Crystal Lake, it's that if you do drugs, the guy will kill you. The guy in the mask, he will kill you. If you're not virtuous, if you have underage fornicating, he will kill you. If you do drugs, he'll kill you. The only way to survive is to be righteous and upright.
I've never thought about in a horror movie scenario, am I a survivor or not? And
you're not, dude. You're.
I feel like I was.
We're the type of guys that get first thing.
No, I feel like I was a survivor, but I'm not.
The virginal girl is the only one who has a chance to survive.
Yeah, but I could have been like
you have a certain virginal girl quality.
I do. Like I could have been like the like the dorky nerd character who, you know, doesn't I wouldn't have any comeuppance, right? Like usually there's a poetic justice. Like you get killed because you were an asshole earlier in the film to someone or something like that. And like
you let a kid drown. Well, you were making out with your girlfriend.
Yeah, like I feel like I wouldn't do that. But hey, but now,
you know, we're going to revisit this again. I know we've talked about this before, but I went to a big punk rock festival last year, covered for Punk News, and I got to tell you, the one you're going to does sound more appealing because this alleged camp anarchy is the least anarchy thing you've ever seen. It's like a freaking Gestapo. It's like voluntarily checking into a concentration camp. And it's filthy and it's disgusting. And I'm pretty sure you have to sign a waiver to suspend most all of your civil rights once you enter there. So at least this one sounds like kind of wild. And I appreciate that fact. There's one that I am looking at going to, but it's like that. But some of them are so rigid. Like your tent must be this size. You cannot go out of your space. If you're caught walking around after 2 a.m., you will be shot. You know, it's, I think this one sounds more like the early acid test where like the Grateful Dead would play and they would just drink this punch spiked with LSD.
Well, like
that's what this one sounds like.
I don't want to say that there's is just complete anarchy and no rules or anything like that. But like, as I am looking at the various like photos and descriptions and FAQ questions and stuff like that, it clearly does not seem like it ain't Coachella, right? Like,
it's half a rave, basically.
Yes, but I'm like, but then the other part of it is like, can I go listen to like weirdo psych rock droning for 2 days? Like, I think I can, but
wouldn't you be? I don't know. Maybe you make some friends. I go to shows by myself all the time. I know John goes to shows by himself.
And, well, and I totally go to shows by myself all the time. I don't usually go to
2 days.
Yeah, maybe. But if I show up, you know, they say
like mumbling around like you. Like your beard would suddenly turn gray and get very long and you just like would tear your clothes off and just walk around in your filthy tidy whiteies.
Well, that's
you
what, this do is it, what
Adam,
I was,
Adam, free yourself.
You know how when they say like, you know, oh, if you were had a certain persona in high school, well, if you go to a university somewhere else, you can just become a whole new person on the first day because no one will know you from the way that you used to act. Well, I wonder if it's that sort of situation where like I show up at this thing. And I'm, yeah, like exactly, like I'm just like a wizard. I'm like a psych rock wizard, right? And I'm covered in covered in beads and just wander about shaking a stick at people. I'm tempted. I am tempted. What do you think, listeners?
I think Adam should go as Psych Rock Acid Wizard, and maybe he'll come back as Psych Rock Acid Wizard. I think that would be awesome. So write in and let us know, should Adam go out into the woods and do a bunch of acid and watch some garage rock bands? He'll do whatever you vote for, so we'll find out. One last thing I want to touch on briefly. Boys Off is doing their Kickstarter for their new album and new movie, and it looks very exciting. Here's the problem. They won 175 G's. I think they're going up to 75 G's, and there's 1 week left. And I tried to buy something else, but Kickstarter won't let you. It'll only let you change the item you want. It won't let you buy two items. Anyways, everyone should go to the Off Kickstarter and buy shit so Adam and I can get our sweet, sweet goodies from Off and so this album and movie gets made. And so I get to go to the Off live concert and get filmed and interviewed and all that cool stuff.
Yeah, so how do they do that, the listener?
Go to Google and put in Off Kickstarter, and it pops right up. And here's how much money they have right now. Do you guys think they're going to make it? I don't think they are. I really hope they do. They're up to 100 grand, and they need 75 more grand, and there's 1 week left. But it's possible they'll make it. It's possible.
What's their plan if they don't?
Here's the plan. They made the, I would say, rookie – well – unfortunately, the campaign had two problems. In trademark infringement, there's an axiom. No matter how different two things are, you can always find some knucklehead that'll confuse the two. The point being is, even though like they announced this as like an April Fool's joke, and a lot of people said, "Was this a joke? Oh, I thought it was a joke." No. The announcement was the joke. The actual thing is real, but people like are so blockheaded that they don't understand this is real. Some people still think this whole thing is a joke and not real. But the point being is, on Facebook, I did see someone said to Keith, "What if this doesn't fund?" And Keith says, "Well, if it doesn't fund, we're still going to make it. So we're not going to do it if it doesn't fund." But they made the mistake of making it. They get the money only if they reach their goal. They should have made it they get money no matter what, you know. Ooh, somebody's bought $100 worth of this stuff. I'm watching it right now. All right. We're already having an effect, boys.
Yeah, people are listening to the show as we record it, which is not concerning at all. So, yeah, that's happening. You going to play a song?
Yeah. So on May 4, it's the Punk News Proto-Punk Party. And the Dogs are playing, which we played last week. Joel Tannenbaum's new band, Code of the Jaguar, is playing. Atlantic Thrills are playing. And one of my very favorite new punk rock bands, Quam, is playing. And I'm going to play a track by Quam. This is Quam playing a song off their brand new album. And the song is called Everybody Wants to Watch the World, the World, the World.
One, two. No one.
And we're back. And that was Quam. Let's hit the news, boys. We're already 45 minutes in and we haven't even touched the news. And there's some, actually, our main news story for this week is probably one of the biggest punk rock news items in the past decade. Not the biggest, but one of the biggest. As everyone knows, there's two main Cro-Mags, Hardy Flanagan and John Joseph. Hardy Flanagan is the bass player. John Joseph is the singer. They hate each other. Hardy Flanagan says, I wrote all the music and all the lyrics. John Joseph says, Hardy wrote some of the music and some of the lyrics, but I wrote most of the lyrics. They hate each other. They broke up after the release of Age of Quarrel, which was 1986. They got back together briefly in the early 2000s, and since then, their animosity has increased probably fivefold, and they really, really, really hate each other. It climaxed with criminal prosecution, although the charges were dropped. Certain parties did go to jail briefly, not prison, jail, briefly. So that's pretty bad. It was pretty bad for a while. Last year, Hardy Flanagan sued John Joseph for ownership of the Cro-Mags trademark. I suspect that was influenced by the Misfits lawsuit because, as we all know, Glenn Danzig sued Jerry Only, and that lawsuit actually ended up being the Misfits reunion. I think Harley, who opened for the Misfits in the New Jersey show, saw that and said, well, I could do that as well. And to his credit, it looks like Harley's plan worked out exactly as he planned a year ago or so. Harley sued John Joseph for the Cro-Mags trademark, and just this week it settled. And here is the settlement, which is very much a Music 2019 settlement. Hardy Flanagan will now become the Cro-Mags actually immediately. Meanwhile, John Joseph and Mackie Jason will be Cro-Mags JM, as in Cro-Mags John and Mackie. There will be some confusion for the next 3 months because the John Joseph Cro-Mags will be billed as Cro-Mags for the next 3 months. But starting in August, the John Joseph Mackie Jason band will be Cro-Mags JM, and Hardy Flanagan will just be the Cro-Mags, which is kind of a flip-flop of what it's been for the past 10 years. Because for the past 10 years, Cro-Mags has been John Joseph and Hardy Flanagan has been Hardy Flanagan or hardcore or things sort of like that. I think a lot of people were surprised by this settlement. Both parties read a statement that basically said it was very matter of fact, just letting people know it. So it clearly was the statement they read was clearly part of the settlement. And we've got two Cro-Mags now, basically. We've got the Cro-Mags with Harley, and we've got Cro-Mags JM. Is this a win-win, as some people have said, or is this a lose-lose in that we've got two semi-Cro-Mag bands and no full Cro-Mag band, if you will?
This is confusing as fuck what it is. On the one hand, like, I'm happy that these guys who seem to, like, have warred with each other for so long that it's nice to see them reach, a detente. That's good. Yeah. You know, that makes me happy from just a, you know, oh, it's nice that they're not fighting standpoint, because, makes life a little bit easier for everyone after that, and hopefully for them as artists as well. I just, there's something that fundamentally grates me about having a band called Cro-Mags and then a band called Cro-Mags JM. It's just, there's something about bands creating initials to get around naming disputes that has, for my entire life as a music fan, driven me fucking nuts. And I just, because I'm never sure what I'm supposed to, how I'm supposed to say it, and how much that is just there for the sake of copyright, but not actually something.
You mean trademark.
Trademark. But not said aloud. What are some like boring punk band examples of this? But like, you know, like you had
Venom.
Yeah, no, but so Smoker Fire used to be a band called like Jericho RVA, right? Because there was another Jericho.
The Measure SA.
The Measure, will. Yeah. So for something like the Measure SA, if you were to meet that guy on a bus and you're to say, oh, hi, and he goes, oh, hey, I'm in a band. And you go, what band are you in? Does he say, I'm in the Measure? Or does he say, I'm in the Measure SA? Like, is it just like something, where they say, you know what, we've got to put these extra letters on our posters and on our records so that no one gets mad at us. But no one in their right mind is going to say the Measure SA. Like, is that, are they going to get on stage and be like, hey, we're Cro-Mags JM. Here we go.
Legally, he probably will have to, honestly.
It's not just from the stage. Just on the
list. I don't know, man. I mean, listen, there's bad blood all around, so I suspect they'll each be watching each other like a hawk, because as we know, these two love to fight each other. They love to fight each other. As much as they both say they don't, they do.
You know, the difference between these guys and the Misfits, I obviously missed the beginning of this conversation, is the Misfits, it was so much money on the table. I don't think there's enough money on the table to make these two play nice.
Good point. The other issue about the Misfits, though, Tom, is Glenn Danzig doesn't really care about the name the Misfits because it's been so tarnished. Like, he's like, that's not me. You know what I mean? Like,
that's true. If you look at the ticket stubs for all these new shows, it says the original Misfits. Yeah, and as a matter of fact, some of them I saw said Glenn Danzig and Jerry Only at the top, and then underneath it, the original Misfits.
Yeah, my ticket was billed not as the Misfits. It was billed as Glenn Danzig and Jerry Only. Isn't that interesting? With this, though, you know, there's a lot of pride. There's a lot of animosity towards each other. So to a degree, it's not even about the money. It's about ownership of a thing that I treasure, which to a degree you could say is more pure than money. You know what I mean? But I think it just comes down to them not liking each other. However, I actually would argue that because this is settled, this is another stepping stone towards a true Cro-Mags reunion, which, I mean, honestly, if it doesn't happen soon, when is it going to happen? But I would not be surprised if there was a true Cro-Mags reunion.
You know, go ahead, Joe.
I will say I'm very impressed by Harley Flanagan. I don't know this, but it appears from the outside that he clearly had a tactical plan, and his plan worked exactly as he wanted it to. And that's pretty impressive. In law, that's pretty impressive, because in law, that usually doesn't happen. You know what I mean? Like, 1 out of 4 times, maybe. But, like, your plan works out exactly as you planned.
Especially when his more typical method of problem resolution is stabbing.
So anyways, I was surprised by
this. All right, but you know, John, we had a little clue that this was going to happen, and you know what I'm talking about, right? That the Misfits show in L.A. was built, had the Cro-Mags billed as the opener. And people were scratching their heads like, well, how can Danzig do it, or how can they do this? They had Harley's band open the one in New Jersey. What kind of a move is this? But that was the first sign that Harley had gotten the name back, was that the Cro-Mags, instead of Harley's, what was it billed as in the New Jersey show?
Harley Flanagan's Hardcore.
Harley Flanagan's Hardcore, yeah. So it will, in fact, be the Harley Flanagan Cro-Mags opening for the Misfits.
As I said earlier, with trademark, you can always find two knuckleheads that'll get confused. This is pretty we're really into this kind of thing. So we like with Black Flag and Flag, people are still confused that Jello's not in the Dead Kennedys. You know what I mean?
Oh, every time Dead Kennedys do a show, somebody say, yeah, was Jello going to be with them? It's like, really? Or, yeah, the new Black Flag lineup. I always see the comments. Facebook people are the stupidest, you know? Is Henry going to be singing? Yeah, dude. Henry's going to be singing. That's why they're playing for $12 at a club that holds 200 people, because Henry Rollins is singing.
Do you guys think that those people really are that stupid, or they're just doing that to be annoying? I don't know.
I think the majority of them are that stupid.
No, I know for a fact that there is a whole realm of, like, casual music listener that just does not operate with the same level of information as the enthusiast. And what really blew me away was that, like, I met a guy at a show, and he was I don't want to age shame you here, but he was maybe your age, maybe a little bit older than you. So I meet this guy, and we're seeing a shadowy man on a shadowy planet. Right. And so we're seeing this old Canadian, like, you know, fucking, like, surf rock band that is that's associated with, like, the Kids in the Hall scene. So if you were really into,
so you basically had to be a little older to get the reference,
right? Well, yeah. So you had to be, you know, in your, you know, an enthusiast, kind of like in the 80s or say to kind of like be into this, right? So they're playing a reunion show in St. Catharines, and I'm there, and this guy's there having a beer, and we're talking. And I don't know, we got to talking about shows or something like that. And he says to me, he's like, oh, yeah, he's like, we saw the Dead Kennedys in Buffalo recently. And I was like, oh, yeah, we're talking about that. And I may have, I'm sure I jumped in with, like, Punk News brain on, and I was like, well, who was singing, or right? And I was kind of going at that. And he's like, no, it was Jello. I'm like, dude, it was not Jello. And he was dead serious. He's like, it was Jello. Like, Jello is the singer of the Dead Kennedys. How could I have seen the Dead Kennedys in Buffalo a year ago if it wasn't Jello singing? I'm like, it was not Jello.
Eventually, just like, I just can't argue with this guy anymore. I just don't want to do this
like,
right now.
And the weird thing is, like, he was just like there was no nerdity in it. He was just like, oh, like, of course it was Jello. Like, who else would it be?
Of course. How could it be? How could you have the Dead Kennedys without Jello?
Right.
So what if it really was Jello and they like just got together that day and didn't tell anybody that they hate each other afterwards?
Well, I tell you, Skip, as he's gotten older, Skip McSkipster, whatever the guy who sings for him now, if you squint, he bears a bit of a resemblance to Jello, or maybe Jello 10 years ago, more like.
So, but those, I think that there is a wide swath of people that are genuinely going to go, is Henry playing for them?
And oh, not, they do. And, dude, it's all the time. Yeah. And I just don't think I don't think they're kidding. I think they just don't know. Which is fine. These people are probably doing something better with their lives than what we are. You know, we dedicate a lot of our lives to stupid shit.
It's true. Well, listen, in contrast to acrimonious splits, here's an amicable split. Kayetana, they've announced their final three shows in a hiatus. They will be playing they'll be playing three
Boston,
shows. They'll be playing
Boston August 1st, Brooklyn August 2nd, and then hometown in Philly on August 3rd.
Not a whole lot of people were surprised by this because they haven't played a show in over a year, and pretty much everyone assumed that they were broken up. The reason that they're probably splitting up or just calling, you know, putting on ice for a while is one of the members is moving to California. Another member is in a grad school program, and the third member has a new band, Augusta. She's got a group called Gladdy, which is kind of cool. So a lot of people are sad. They're a great group, and I just have a comment about this in that their final show is at Union Transfer, which is a larger venue in Philadelphia. Kayetana is a known band. They've been covered in lots of magazines, including Rolling Stone, but also including Billboard, you know, AV Club. Everyone's covered Kayetana. They're semi-well-known in that they can tour the United States, they can even tour Europe, and they get a draw. So they're a mid-level band, and people go and see them. You know, they've got a draw of 200, 300, 400, even 500 in some areas. Philadelphia's going to be even bigger. It's and this is not an insightful comment, but it's a sad state that where a band at this level can't hold together just because the money's not there anymore. I mean, a band that can tour the United States semi-comfortably should be able to make a living off music, and they can. And that's the state of the world that we're in right now. And Jesse Michaels made this comment a while ago. He said, I'd rather a great musician make his money from music than by flipping hamburgers, because there he's just wasting his talent, which is true. And so it's on everyone's heads that a band of this skill and level can't make enough money to be convinced to stay together, despite the fact that they've got tons of fans, despite the fact that they're critically approved, if you will, or the critics like them, and that they're not in like a down period of the band. Their last record was highly reviewed. Everyone liked it. So it's not like they put out a bad record or two and people lost interest. The interest in this band is as high as it ever was, and they still can't hold it together just because the money's not there.
That sucks.
That does suck. We don't have a solution for that. John, if we had a solution for that.
Okay, well, how about you can get a solution for this along a similar line? Direct Hit, well-known fat records band. People, the punk news kids love this band. Well, all of a sudden, their drummer and their bassist quit the band. They had a tour planned, and it's still going forward, but it might just be the guitarist and the singer, or they might get another backing band, but all of a sudden, the band broke up. And perhaps in a bit of a refreshing statement, whereas bands often say, we've decided to part ways, but we wish each other well. It was just time to go in a different direction. This was a pretty angry note. This was a pretty angry spiel on Facebook. They said, notice, Danny and Steve quit Direct Hit a couple of weeks ago. The two of us left are canceling zero shows and leaning on our musically inclined buddies to fill in while we figure out a new permanent lineup. See you all with the Smoking Popes on May 11th. So I got to say, looks like these guys all hate each other, and the band's gone through a lot of members. I don't know if we have any insight in regard to that. Do people care? Or in the realm of pop punk, is going through a million members just par for the course, because that's what pop punk bands do.
Well, they're keeping Nick Woods, the guitar player, singer, obviously the main songwriter, and the other guitar player. I don't know enough about this band to to know how many members they've gone through. But the fact of the matter is, these are guys who had, these are guys who had to work for a living. It's a bitch, man. They're trying to work day jobs, hold down their lives together, and go on tour. And I don't know if I don't have any inside information. I've met Nick. He's a nice guy. I grew up in the Milwaukee area, so we hit it right off. And I have no inside information about this band. But it's just, you know, it's tough to say another band that they're on fat, but they don't make a living doing this.
But is there something suspicious about a band that's had 20 members, you know, like three or four, you know, if you have eight members total, hey, I could buy that. But like 20, that's a lot.
I don't think those are all like, hey, I'm the bass player for Direct Hit now. I think a lot of those are, hey, Direct Hit is going for a weekend to the East Coast and they need somebody to play bass. And I played bass in Direct Hit for a long weekend. I don't, you know what I mean? There's kind of a fine line there.
Counter-strike, and I'll let Adam respond to this perhaps, is it suspicious that two members are quitting at the same time, not one member?
I don't know. I feel like a whole rhythm section quitting feels appropriate to me because, you know, the drum and the bass, right? They got to be in lockstep with each other. That's just a sign that they were a good rhythm section, right?
They do everything together, you know what I mean, they shower together, right? They go to the bathroom together, they quit the band together.
Yeah, that's how it works.
I don't have any insight into that, but the days of, you know, four guys being the same four guys for years and years and years and years, it's just not like that in general, you know. It just doesn't seem like that's the case at all anymore, almost, these bands. So
plus, when you're 24, whatever, man, you know, you don't need any money. When you're 34, 32,
I would say that's about the age for those guys. They're in their 30s. Yeah. But the thing is, too, when you're older versus younger, when you're younger and you're playing in a band, and I have a certain amount of insight this. I played in a bunch of bands over the years. When you're younger and you can't get along anymore, it's just like, fuck this. I can't do this. I quit. We have to split up. When you get older, you can get a little more patience where you're like, okay, we're having some issues, but that doesn't mean we need to quit entirely. Or when you're young, though, you're just like, screw this, you know, make enemies of everyone who's in the band and burn all the earth behind you. When you get older, you get a little wiser and you're not so likely to do that. You know, you realize that people got to live their lives and you don't take it all so personally anymore.
And I actually, now to drag this out, which I've said like four times this episode, but when bands get to about 30, 32, they also hit the following problem, which rips apart a lot of bands. Two of the guys or one of the guys or three of the guys, but it's usually two and two. Two of the guys still want to party like they're 24. They want to drink all night. They want to party all night. They want to do some blow, you know, and just like have a wild, crazy time when you're 32. The other half or the other one, the other three are like, you know what? I still want to play music, but I kind of want to be not – at my wit's end constantly, you know,
or they have a kid or a kid's right. Always, you know, big.
That's what tore Ween up. It tore up a whole bunch of other bands as well. So it's what tore up Morning Glory a while back. So anyway, so
that's still. What's going to tear up the podcast, man. All I want to do is party and drink high end tequila. And you guys and Adam wants to smoke his weed. And all John wants to do is drink his lemonade and
argue about the crow bags.
Book shows. Yeah. Argue about the Cro-Mags, but I think this is great because the Cro-Mags thing is great because, I mean, why can't we each have our own version of the Cro-Mags?
Why can't we have our own version of the podcast?
Let's say, John, not only am I going to have my own version of the Cro-Mags, but I'm not even going to bother to show up for my own shows unless they're local. Otherwise, I'm going to send out the hologram. So it's going to be Cro-Mags TT hologram.
You know, there is a band that does exactly that without holograms with standing musicians. Not that I'm a fan of Journey, but if you go see Journey, usually none of the people there are actually Journey. They're people hired by Journey.
Oh.
So they franchised it? Like, did they have like five Journeys that are just like touring? You know, they'll divide up the U.S. into five.
Well, they could keep five one original zones. Or one, like one guy in each band, like Neil Sean could be in one and the keyboard player could be in one. And I don't know, John, I'm skeptical of that. I don't think I believe you, but.
All right.
Listen, go look it up.
So there's a band out of Calgary called the Shiverettes. I saw them play at the Ottawa Explosion a few years ago. They had a record out that was their first called Dead Men Can't Catcall, and they've just followed it up with their second one, which is called Real Shrill Bitches. So if the names don't kind of get it across, this is a this is an angry kind of like Riot Girl inspired punk band, a lot of feminist social commentary, very sarcastic and sardonic and all that. So anyways, though, they're great. They're super fun. So the record Real Shrill Bitches just came out, and I'm going to play a song from it. I'm
going to
play the song.
Wow, I wonder where you're going with this, Adam. See, I thought you were going to say, oh, this band is split into
this is called The Hard Seg. It's like people are just muttering.
You had enough of boom. John and I talking about Journey, and you wanted to move on. Fine,
absolutely.
Adam.
As we'll did the listeners. So anyways, here's a song from Real Shrill Bitches. It's called Spite Burger, which totally sounds like a Descendants song. Mm. Anyways, so this is Spite Burger from the new Shivrets album. They're a 4-piece out of Calgary. You should go check them out. Here you go.
Digging that. Let's blast through a couple of last things. I put this in here. There's something to say about this. Woodstock 50. We made fun of it when it was announced, and now they've got problems. Woodstock 50 is scheduled to take place in August. I think it's August like 8 or August 9. August 8, 16, 17, 18, Woodstock 50. But they got problems. Tickets aren't even on sale yet, which is very unusual for a gigantic music festival. In case you don't know, the headliners are Killers, Jay-Z, Miley Cyrus, Dead & Company, which is the Grateful Dead and John Mayer for some reason. Anyways, they got big problems.
The surviving members, a couple of members of Grateful Dead.
They got big problems. The concert is a mere 3 months away, and tickets aren't even on sale yet. And why aren't tickets on sale yet? Because they haven't gotten the permits to actually throw the show, and they only filed for the permits this week that we're talking about right now, which astounds me. The point being is, if I'm throwing a tiny punk news show with 100, 150 people, I've got it all set up 4 months in advance. You know what I mean? They're throwing a 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 capacity show, hundreds of millions of dollars. The guarantees alone for the acts are over $100 million. Maybe not over $100 million, over $40 or $50 million. And they just filed for the permits last week. Who's running the ship here? It's like the hippies are running the show. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm astounded.
Well, it's as well organized as the original. Maybe that's their homage to the 1969 version where bands were going on at like 6 a.m.
I mean, I know it's funny. I know it's easy to speak from outside looking in, but how do you not have your permits for that? How do you announce this before you have your friggin' permits?
Just goes to show that like the entire reason anyone's talking about this is because of the brand. Right. Because, you know, you get attention because you're using that Woodstock trademark to get the attention. doesn't matter who your lineup is. It can be a bunch of junk, which it is. You know, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if you actually throw the show or get the permits or whatever, because, you know, you've got the Woodstock name. They certainly had time to go make a giant website full of merchandise that you can go purchase. So like that, they had enough time and forethought to go, you know, make somewhere where you can plunk your money over, but not to actually set up the show. So
it'd be great if this was like the new Firefest.
That's what I was thinking the whole time.
Just like we sold 5 million $12 can koozies, but no tickets. Oh,
not only that, it's the killer, or not the killers. I'm sorry. The Black Lips mysteriously pulled out of the show. They said, oh, we have scheduling conflict, which, as we all know in the industry, usually, not always, usually means one thing.
Black Keys pulled out.
No, Black Lips.
Was it Black Lips?
No, it was Black Keys. I'm sorry.
I was going to say Black Keys. I bet the Black Lips guarantee is much, much less than the Black Keys.
Yeah. It was Black Keys. It was Black Keys.
But anyways, I think the Black Lips would probably be willing to play for free to play for 100,000 people. But I don't want to speak for the Black Lips. I don't know them personally, but I'm going to say that this would be a great gig for them.
I mean, the Black Lips are a band that was infamous for a while for peeing on stage. So
they played here. I wanted to go see them, but for whatever reason, I can't remember. I didn't get to see them. Make you swing your hips. That's kind of music that make you swing your hips.
I don't know why I do have schadenfreude with this festival. I guess because it's just so crass in its marketing, despite what its proposed core tenant is. And I don't even care about the core tenant that much, you know. So I don't know.
But man, you know, the thing with the original Woodstock is it was spontaneous. Not that it wasn't planned to a certain extent, but they never anticipated it turning out to be what it was. You can't plan that by its very nature, by its very definition. You can't plan that. I thought you were going to say, John, the reason this thing is getting such good press is because they just released the Green Day live at the 94 Woodstock on vinyl finally. And now people just can't wait to hear it.
They need to call up Narmer Productions and have Norman Productions get this thing back on track. That's what they need to do. Listen,
John, all they need is a, you know, like our president starting out, all it needs is a small multi-million dollar seed fund, and it'll be fine.
Speaking of people that do know how to plan things, here's something that's cool. Robert Pollard of Guided by Voices is throwing a
Man, I love Led Zeppelin.
Robert Palmer was not in Led Zeppelin.
Oh, that was Robert Plant. Sorry.
Robert Pollard is throwing a very special Guided by Voices New Year Eve show. It's at the Terragram Ballroom in Los Angeles. It's going to be December 31st, obviously. Here's the cool thing. He's going to be doing 100 songs in a row on New Year's Eve, which is pretty cool. Guided by Voices often does 40 or 50 song sets, which actually is pretty impressive.
Yeah, sure, they're 2 minute songs.
Yeah, I know, but 2 minutes times. Well, first of all,
that's what I'm saying. I'm as skeptical about this as I am about multiple touring journeys. I just can't. I mean, he's gonna have to play like 1 minute of each song, right?
I don't know, man. He is a weirdo. Like every morning he wakes up.
I was saying, you want to talk about rhythm sections, John? How many band members is this guy going through?
Like a billion. But
I was going to say, make Direct Hit look like a bunch of pikers.
But I will say, man, at least he's doing something cool and interesting and clever. You know, I mean, this is neat.
You can get into Guided by Voices, John?
You know, I've tried getting into Guided by Voices, and I've heard some stuff. I'm like, oh, this is all right. But people love Guided by Voices. Guided by Voices.
That sounds just like me. Like, I don't dislike them, and there's some people whose opinions I really respect who love them, but I just cannot get into it. Well, you Adam. It's kind of cool. Lo-fi. It seems like something you might like.
Yeah, it's more, it's up my alley, and it's definitely something that's an influence on a lot of the stuff that I'm listening to these days more directly than otherwise. But that said, it's still one of those bands that's like further down my list of, you know, oh, I should really go, you know, dig through that catalog at some point. And, you know, outside of the,
tell me your top 100 Guided by Voices songs right now, Adam.
Okay. So we're going to start with the, I'm not as into them as I should be. But I'm not against them. I feel that I would probably want to be a little bit more versed to go see them crank through 100 songs.
It's one of those bands, you know, it's one of those bands I respect, though I just don't listen to them, you know?
This is a band I would love to love because they literally put out like five albums
yeah.
a year.
Yeah, they're Melvin, their output is Melvin's-esque.
I know, but I've tried. I like it. I don't love it. I like it, like, but I'm not going to buy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not something you just do.
But Adam, concert-wise, this is cool, right? Like if this was, I don't know, the Dirty Nil doing 100 songs, that'd be cool, right?
Dirty Nil has like 14 songs total.
The Dirty Nil actually has a song called Guided by Vices. I think it's cool. I have no reason to be snide about this at all. I mean, especially if you're a fan, it's a totally nuts thing to go see.
One thing I want to ask, and we don't have the answer to this. Do you think any punk/alt/even rock band has ever done 100 songs in a row before at a concert? Like even a grindcore band?
I think DRI used to do like 50 song sets. I once saw Anal Cunt do a 666 song set.
Yeah, but see that's not really 666 songs.
It's just like there's a song, there's another song. Yeah, I know.
But no, it's not even 666 grunts. If you actually listen to that recording, it's like one song. You know what I mean?
Yeah, one bad song.
I feel that like DRI is a good one, but like MDC probably did stuff like that.
MDC does do like 60 song sets.
But it's like 50, awesome. Yeah. I remember seeing DRI was one. I remember when they hung their set list up from their amps, like their 6 foot tall amps back in the day, and the set list just went down all. It was like on like 8 pieces of typing paper. You know, they were so long. The other one who I would say that about when I saw All the first time, which would have been I don't know 94 or something like that. All used to still play Descend songs occasionally, and they had that same thing. The set list was just like, oh my god, you know, you see people with their signed set lists. This thing was so long, you'd have to hang it from your ceiling to get it to not hang on the ground.
I remember when I saw the New Misfits, they had a gigantic set list like hanging behind them. It was so weird. Like, why are you doing that? It was weird.
It's like ruining the mystery, right? Like ruining the not knowing. Like,
I didn't know what that statement was. Were they like bragging, saying this is what we're giving you, or was it just big so they could like look back and look at it?
Do you think it was like they wanted to make sure you knew that it was a couple of old songs coming at the end, so you didn't like walk out during the new songs?
I don't. It was weird. I guess that was a success, and that was weird. And I'm still thinking about it today, which is clever art. Speaking of things that people are still thinking about and might be clever art or might be just distressing, Fat Mike has released a video for his song "Cokey the Clown." The video is off. The video is for the song "Negative Real." I screwed this whole. Fat Mike, in his Cokey the Clown persona, has released a video for the song Negative Real. It's off the album You're Welcome, which is the first Cokey the Clown album, which is out on Friday. Cokey the Clown has released an EP and maybe a couple other tracks here or there. The theme of the album, I guess, is how depressed Mike is. A lot of people have the question is Mike really in a super bad, like a super bad place that this video suggests, or is it all performance art and it's a big gag and he's not really feeling like suicidal like this video and the album cover suggests? In the video he hangs himself and cuts himself. Oh, it's so bad.
Dude, he spends 30 seconds at the end beating himself in the head with a giant hammer.
It really is upsetting.
I've seen snuff films that were more happy-go-lucky than that video.
One thing, and they talked about this in the NoFX autobiography or oral history, which really is good, is Fat Mike has complained there's no more Darby crashes, and Melvin says to him, well, Darby Crash is dead, and you don't seem to realize that. The point being is Fat Mike on a Darby Crash course, if you will?
Fat Mike has got to be in his early 50s now. I think it's a little too late to Darby crash it, isn't it?
Maybe that's
Darby was like 21.
Yeah, but it's not too late to romanticize it.
What did you think about this, Adam? Tell me what you thought about this depressing. The music was depressing. The video was depressing. It didn't even have that bitter humor. It was just like, ugh.
The video was genuinely. I found the video to be genuinely disturbing.
Yeah, there are actually.
I mean, like, not like scary, but just like off-putting. Like,
I mean, from a film standpoint, there's aspects of this video that are kind of fun. There's a lot of like reverse shot stuff that they're doing to, you know, where Michael like fall out of a you know, he'll fall into a cabinet, but it was clearly he fell out of the cabinet, but they reversed the shot. And they kind of like built a lyric video around that. And that's,
yeah, the words on the wall was kind of cool.
Like there's stuff in the video that is like, I mean, my general disdain for lyric videos, notwithstanding, that are, you know, are kind of cute and effective and all that. I'm not sure who Mike's audience is supposed to be with a lot of the stuff that he's doing right now. And because, but I guess it's not me. And I generally don't begrudge him for the directions that he's gone with some of this stuff. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure how much this is him being like weird and disturbing for the NoFX audience, whereas there is stuff that is actually this weird and disturbing that plays, you know, like naturally in the, I don't know, in some weirdo music scene that I'm not privy to, right? Like, I don't know if that makes any sense, but like I fully believe that there's a weird genre of music out there for, you know, for every taste. Like, there's a fan group out there for everything. So, you know, is there probably a whole community of people that are singing weird, sad bondage clown songs? I bet you there are. Circus
hobo music. Like, oh, it's got to be a tiny fraction of an audience. So.
Well, no, but like, I bet you there are. Like, I like that, you know, that there's some like hot, that like really, really high art, or they think they're high art, you know, crowd that's into shit like this. And I bet you it intersects with that industrial scene that we talked about. But the, I wonder if that's out there, and that to them, this kind of stuff is just kind of goofy. But if you're a, you know, stereotypical NoFX audience member, seeing Mike do all this stuff seems a lot more shocking. But if you were to take this and to like give it to one of those people, it's from one of these like more extreme scenes, they would be like, yeah, that's kid stuff. I don't know. I'm unsure, because I'm not sure what he's going for with this. And I always want to.
Isn't that good art though, Adam?
I mean,
do you think this is good, John?
That's a great question. The answer is I don't know. I'm undecided, which to begin with is at least interesting art. I agree.
It was interesting. I didn't enjoy it, but it was interesting.
I get a lot of bullshit at punk. I shouldn't say bullshit, just kind of bland stuff. I just dismiss it right away. I'm not able to just dismiss this, and I'm left pondering what this is.
Yeah, at least it's interesting. You know what? You're right.
Yeah, and I think that's the most charitable way that I think you
even
could put
the
it.
Even the NoFX audience, Adam, I mean, I think there's two pretty distinct NoFX audiences. Because, like, I have no...
Bros and frat bros?
Well, no, I have no interest in this at all, but I'll buy the $18 repress of third time I've bought S&M Airlines or something. But a lot of the newer NoFX fans, they do not like the early stuff. And I love the 4-album run that ended with Punk and Drublic. That's the era that I absolutely love. And there was some later albums I like too, but I feel like a lot of the younger people didn't get into them until maybe Punk and Drublic or Heavy Petting Zoo era. So I think there's a couple of camps of fans.
But even, you, even that latter being one of the camp.
Old school guys, I'm not particularly interested in this. But like, I mean, I don't know.
I'm trying to think like who that latter camp would be. So let's say you
probably
got
more like your age, Adam. I mean, are you a big fan of like the Ribbed album and those albums? Because those are the albums.
No.
Love.
I mean, it's like I would consider myself one of the latter. Like, where like when I was a kid, like
Punk and Drublic forward. Right?
Yeah. Like Punk and Drublic was sort
that was
of like,
the end for a lot of us.
Yeah. So Punk and Drublic was sort of like the big like, you know, like third wave ska era album. Right.
That was their black album, you know. That was their transitional album.
But then I remember like what's it called? Pump Up the Volume doing pretty well when it came out.
Oh, I hate that album. Blows though.
And that album,
it's only got one or two songs on that have aged worth of shit.
And that, but that album feels very indicative of like a certain era of Fat and Epitaph bands where they, I feel like that they got like a little bit more assertive and a little bit more, like a little bit better produced and a little bit more kind of like loud and rock and rolly about it. If you think about it, like songs like Dinosaurs Will Die that are on there, where they're really trying to like go out and make a mission statement where they're saying like, yeah, we're old guys, but you know what? Punk rock is great. And and you know, we're putting our foot down about that.
Isn't that so great? 20 years ago, they were contemplating being old guys.
And
meanwhile, they're still at it, you know,
but I feel like a lot of the people that would have come in during that era would have been, say, like orgcore people, would have been like the people that were in this really into, say, like Dillinger Four or something like that.
And I feel like that is that crowd. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't see that crowd
getting into this either.
Getting into this in particular so, either.
And there is no crowd to get into.
I don't know. Like, I feel that there's a lot of people that are, you know, what's the word for this? Like that are rubbernecking the shows, right? Like they're saying, oh, you know, he's going to come to town and play a Cokie the Clown thing. We all know what happened at that infamous, you know, South by Southwest one or whatever it was. It was the from a few years ago. So yeah, we're going to go there to see what kind of crazy shit Mike gets up to. And I think that there's that aspect, but that's not being a music fan. That's being like a performative art fan.
Yeah. So, well, and that's what this is, maybe.
It is, but like the one thing that I can't see it
if it came really close, you know, just, you're right, just for that reason, just to see what happens.
I wouldn't drive
3 hours, which was what I would have to do.
So here's the question. If Mike was playing a show across town as Cokie the Clown, would you go? Sure. I think we'd all go. We'd want to go see what was going on, right?
Yep.
If you were at the record store and this record was there, would you buy the record?
No.
If it was like $8.
Right? Like, and I think that's like,
okay, fair enough. The cutout bin?
Yeah. Like, I'm looking at it from the standpoint of like this is, it's disturbing, but it's not all that disturbing.
It's novelty.
Yeah. It's just,
I'm pretty disturbed. If this is serious, I'm pretty disturbed.
But it's just, it's novelty, and that's fine. There are people that are such Mike, you know, worshipers that they will, you know, if he put out an album of fart noises, they would buy it. I'm just not that guy.
I think this is beyond novelty. Like, I don't know exactly what it is yet, but novelty would be Mike doing a polka album, which is funny. I would say there is, and as we've discussed before, the sad clown is a trope that's been done many, many times before. The fact that he's using that, I think, is actually pretty interesting. Pagliacci, the sad clown, if you will. And so I find this to be pretty artistically clever, at least coming from where Novex comes from, which is sometimes a pretty clever band. And so I would say this is more than novelty. I would say this is daring art. Perhaps it's cliche, but not novelty.
I think we're overanalyzing this.
No, I mean, I to Mike's credit, he's created something that we can sit here and not have a firm opinion on and overanalyze and all that. And that in and of itself is a win, right? When NoFX puts out Coaster, no one's going to go and say like and really have like all that much to say about, you know, another NoFX record that kind of does.
They're going to say what they say about every recent NoFX album. Had a few decent songs on it.
Right.
The last one was really good.
It was all right.
But I could see why he might, especially if he fetishizes the, you know, punk rock as this in this like Darby Crash mode, right? I could totally see why someone looking at one of his records and going that, you know, oh, there's a couple good songs on it, I guess. We'll wait for the next one or whatever. Would probably be like the worst thing. Like, faint praise is probably not what he wants. You want to impact people. You want to get in people's faces. You want to do something shocking.
It. Probably rather have you hate it, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He'd rather have that. I mean, and like, do you guys follow Mike on Instagram or any of that?
No.
So
I think I do. Actually.
So it's been a weird study.
Fat Mike guy.
It's been a weird study in sort of him trying on different like edgy aspects of things, because there was a number of years there where he was just exclusively using social media to like leave drugs places for people, where he would be like, you know, oh, there's a prize in the garbage can at the Denver airport near gate C, if anyone finds it, right? Or something like that, which we're like, wherever he's like thrown a bag of drugs or whatever, or at least that's what he was implying. And so there was like a number of years where like he was doing stuff like that. And then he cut it out. And I don't know if he cut it out because he was on a sober track or because someone was like, you're going to go to jail. Stop doing this. But then he started to really embrace in concert with some of the music that was on those later NoFX records. He started to really embrace the whole, you know, women's clothing thing and really make that part of his whole shtick and something he owns and wears as a part of his personality. And since then, and really in the past year or so, his Instagram feed is just like almost exclusively about, you know, him and his girlfriend showing off whatever, you know, lingerie he's wearing or stuff like that. And really just leaning into that as a, you know, this is who I am, fuck you, I'm going to expose you to it thing. Which, again, sure, okay, I have no problem with that. Then in the last little while, prior to this Koki stuff coming up, it was almost like he launched like a clothing line of women's clothing for men, basically. Like it was almost like a company that was selling the kind of stuff that he was wearing, or I don't know if he started it or he was just sponsoring it or whatever. But it was a weird little while where he was pitching more product than he was trying to shock with. And it made you stop and look and go, all right, has he just like reached a new level of kind of fuck you comfort with this aspect of his life that he's going to make a, you know, have a run of having a clothing line with it? Or has this whole thing been just part of some big sell? But all that kind of is a little bit more in the wayside now with all this Koki stuff that's in. So he's definitely like thrashed about in public over the last few years with regards to, you know, who is Fat Mike. And I feel like a lot of it has been trying to push against the bro-y stereotype of like a NoFX listener. Because like him like aggressively posting about, you know, like for a few years too, there was like all that BDSM stuff that he was posting about. But for him posting about like stuff like that or wearing women's clothing or whatever, I feel all that to a degree. I mean, like, yeah, that's an aspect of his life and he's owning it loudly and that's cool. But I think to a degree, there's also the part where he's saying like, you know what, if you were a big Punk and Drublic fan, and just you were just that because like we were another bro band along with Pennywise and whatever else in your life, well look at this, huh? Right? Like there was that aspect.
I'm an artist.
Well, not just that, like I'm an artist, but like I am a punk and punk is threatening. And there's that. So but this, yeah, like it's not enjoyable to me on kind of like a core level. It's not something that I would go put on to listen to, and I don't think I would buy the record. So like from that aspect, like, you know, all right, like you've reached a new height of performance art, but you're creating a music that I'm not going to be so about. Because
isn't that pure art though, Adam? Like if you're making art not to sell it, but to make an interesting or daring statement, isn't that art? Like in its pure sense,
I mean, it is. But you can probably still go buy this record from Fat Wreck, and it's going to come from a pressing plant and be nicely packaged. And like, I don't know if you can completely claim cool art and at the same point have have basically like this the same machine that's putting out those Pennywise records and NoFX records just, you know, put your high art out.
I think you can, because and let's assume this is high art. I'm not saying it is right now. I'm not saying it isn't. I need to do more investigation. But let's say he takes whacked out daring high art into an area where high art is usually kicked back or not appreciated. That's daring. That's high art, if you ask me. Same with the Mean Gene's Jingles record, which I thought was super clever and funny and good.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I'm not coming to a conclusion on any of this. I'm just, it's clearly puzzled, not for me, and I don't begrudge him it, but I don't have it all figured out.
Well, for Adam, let's play a tune and sail this bad boy on out.
Woo, long show. Okay, play a song.
It's my turn. Dang. I'm actually going to play another song that was sent to me by our good friend, Liverpool Neil, who I'm going to keep referring to as regular Punk News Podcast contributor, Liverpool Neil. He sent me a song by a band. He's a big collector of like 77 British stuff. And he sent me another MP3 from a band I've never heard of called Satan's Rats.
I know that band. Yes, they're cool.
Oh, John's heard of Satan's Rats.
You can get the discography CD for like $8 and it's well worth it.
Nice. The song he sent is In My Love for You. So this is a British band, 77 era British punk band called Satan's Rats. And the song is In My Love for You.
And we'll see you next week. And you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Here's some Satan's Rats for you.